Welcome to Cinema D'Amore, a movie-based podcast out of Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. Like all great podcasts, I have to start with a warning. It's not explicit. Well, we can be explicit, so we always have that up. But you're going to listen to a very strange episode. One of our hosts will sound kind of weird. It's an experimental phase in our lives. Essentially, one of us is new to using an XLR microphone and couldn't cut out some of the feedback that they were getting. So I decided to play around with it, and we have a very experimental sci-fi sounding guest out of nowhere, which fits the theme of V for Vendetta, which is a sci-fi film in the near future. Enjoy.
Dad, what's wrong with the telly?
Good evening, London. Allow me first to apologize for
the emergency channel.
I do, like many of you, appreciate the comforts of everyday routine, the security of the familiar, the tranquility, repetition.
Bloody hell.
I enjoy them as much as any bloke. But in the spirit of commemoration, whereby those important events of the past, usually associated with someone's death or the end of some awful bloody struggle, are celebrated with a nice holiday, I thought we could mark this November the 5th, a day that is sadly no longer remembered, by taking some time out of our daily lives to sit down and have a little chat. There are, of course, those who do not want us to speak.
Let me think.
I suspect even now orders are being shouted into telephones and men with guns will soon be on their way.
It's Chancellor Sutler.
Damn it!
Why? Because while the truncheon may be used in lieu of conversation, words will always retain their power. Words offer the means to meaning, and for those who will listen, the enunciation of truth. And the truth is, there is something terribly wrong with this country, isn't there?
You designed it, sir. You wanted it foolproof. You told me every television in London.
Cruelty and injustice, intolerance and oppression. And where once you had the freedom to object, to think and speak as you saw fit, you now have sensors and systems of surveillance coercing your conformity and soliciting your submission.
We need cameras.
How did this happen? Who's to blame? Well, certainly there are those who are more responsible than others, and they will be held accountable. But again, truth be told, if you're looking for the guilty, you need only look into a mirror. I know why you did it. I know you were afraid. Who wouldn't be? War, terror, disease. There were a myriad of problems which conspired to corrupt your reason and rob you of your common sense. Fear got the best of you, and in your panic, you turned to the now High Chancellor, Adam Sutler. He promised you order, he promised you peace, and all he demanded in return was your silent, obedient consent.
Inspector, you're almost through.
Last night, I sought to end that silence. Last night, I destroyed the Old Bailey to remind this country of what it has forgotten. More than 400 years ago, a great citizen wished to embed the 5th of November forever in our memory. His hope was to remind the world that fairness, justice, and freedom are more than words. They are perspectives. So if you've seen nothing, if the crimes of this government remain unknown to you, then I would suggest that you allow the 5th of November to pass unmarked. But if you see what I see, if you feel as I feel, and if you would seek as I seek, then I ask you to stand beside me one year from tonight, outside the gates of Parliament, and together we shall give them a 5th of November that shall never, ever be forgotten.
Welcome back, pod people, to Cinema D'Amore. I'm Justin Morgan. I'm here with
Chuck Phillips.
And we're working through a new system, so you may hear some weird things, and I apologize. We're talking about V for Vendetta today because it is November the 5th and it falls on a Friday when our regular episodes release. We did plan this 5 years ago. So lucky us for pushing through with our goals.
Yeah, that's really the only thing that's been keeping us going this entire time, is the knowledge that in 5 years we would get to do a V for Vendetta episode.
It's been sitting on our schedule for the entire time. As we add new stuff, there was always, November 5th, 2021, staring us in the face. I spent the weekend reading the book and then rewatching the movie and then watching stuff for our friends' podcast that I'm going to be on. Absolutely the least Halloween weekend of all time for me.
This is how I justified it last night. I watched Nightmare Before Christmas, as I usually do once at Halloween and then once at Christmas every year. And then after that, I was like, oh, I gotta watch V for Vendetta. I'm like, it's a guy in a mask with knives. Like, it's practically, you know, a Halloween film.
He does have some serial killer in him.
Yeah,
for
he's
sure.
Definitely a psychopath that loves murdering people. He walks around in a mask. I mean, what's the big difference between him and, Michael Myers or Jason Voorhees? Maybe that he's got some grand plans to go along with his murder.
Yeah, that moment where he survives all the fingermen shooting him, and then he ends up lifting up Creedy and strangling him up against the gate. Such a Michael Myers move.
I mean, it's practically the end of Halloween Kills. They did
yeah.
it first.
They did it first. They did it 2005. The comics from 1988 and 1989, it ran for a year. 12 issues, or 10 issues, sorry. It was short of a year. But Alan Moore, always getting the shaft, supposedly. He did Watchmen and From Hell.
League of Extraordinary Gentlemen.
That is a shit show of a movie.
Yeah, I don't know. This, I guess, might be... I feel like this one may be his best, or not his best, but like the best adaptation of his work. Like, I don't think Watchmen's bad. I don't think Zack Snyder's version's bad. It maybe gets a little too caught up in trying to just recreate the pictures in the book than it does try to be an interesting story or do anything super interesting with the material. This version's like not a direct, like exact retelling of the story. It does have some differences and some minor changes here and there, but all in all, it's a pretty interesting one. I think this might be like the most concise version of one of his books that they've done.
I'll say it again. I would throw out the word remix. It definitely feels like a remix of his graphic novel.
Yeah, and I know that's part of like what he complained about it for, was that he felt like it, since it was made by American filmmakers, that they added more of like an American spin to it. And I mean, they almost kind of like try to like predict almost like a Donald Trump like character coming up that's like just super populist and, you know, basically wants to get rid of free speech and all that type of stuff.
When they describe the Chancellor, they perfectly describe Trump and Trump followers.
Yeah.
He doesn't care about the system. He just wants more power. And the more power he gets, like, the angrier his followers get and the more volatile his followers get.
Yeah.
I think going through Deja Vu.
The news programs are like Fox News, and that it's like, almost the same thing as like fake news when they, the guy that's the voice of Britain or whatever he calls himself, like feels like an Alex Jones type character. And that's what he says, is that he doesn't make the news, or no, he doesn't fabricate the news. The government fabricates the news for him. He just reports it.
Right. Yeah, I think for the most part, when I'm after reading the graphic novel, which I never read it before, it does.
You never read it before this weekend?
Yeah, okay. I never read it before. I had. Everyone always says that it's better than the movie, and I think that they're right.
Yeah.
But also, you're looking at something that could be a mini series. It almost might work better as a 6-episode, Watchmen that was on HBO.
HBO,
just a
yeah,
short,
that's...
limited series would have been great.
I feel like, yeah, that's the only problem. And we can get into like more detail, I guess, as we go along. But that's I think only my biggest complaint with the movie is that sometimes it's limited to the fact that it's trying to tell a pretty, you know, complicated story in, you know, just over 2 hours. And they feel the need very often in this film that it would take too long to show you everything, so we'll just have a character like read a journal or something like that, or something that would be in a book, like a character reading a journal.
The exposition is like heavy.
Yeah, that's like my only real complaint with this movie, or I guess my biggest complaint. There's other things that maybe don't work as well, but that's the middle section of the movie where it's a lot of just characters having to explain to you the connections between things. It starts off really great with a lot of great action moments and a lot of cool setups, and the finale's great. It's really that midsection where, yeah, they just like really have to tell you everything because they don't have enough time to show you, or they just don't feel like they could show you and have it make sense. So they just are like, ah, we'll just have a character like tell you everything.
Yeah, and I think that's what they kind of worked on with the Finch character, who is the detective. Yeah. In the comic, he's like a wife-beating asshole.
Yeah.
So they stripped him of that to make him more of an audience, I don't know what to call him.
Surrogate.
Yeah, so he asks all the questions and tries to figure out what's going on with him. In the comic book, though, they don't really explain the Guy Fawkes thing, and he's not really honoring Guy Fawkes straight up. There's almost no explanation as to who Guy Fawkes was. And in the movie, they do like the flashback of him from 400 years ago. And it almost feels like too much exposition, too, because by the time you get to the end of this movie, he's basically repeating his entire motto that, you know, ideas live. And he's just flesh and bone. It doesn't, you know, he's already changed the course of history by his actions, that he doesn't have to be there and be present for it, I guess, is the best way to... He's also a very rich person, I guess, because he's able to send out packages to every single person in England. And the book sets him up as a very intelligent person. He essentially gets into gardening when he's at the Larkhill reassignment center thing that they have, and he's the one that ends up like blowing up the place and escaping. And they don't really they make it just sound like an accident happened and he got out, not that he caused the accident.
That's what it feels like in the movie. I know that's another thing they kind of like tone down, I guess, like his more psychotic tendencies. They kind of, for the film, they did try to, I feel like, make him more of just your standard, like, anti-hero, kind of a little closer to something like The Punisher or something like that, that, oh, well, he's doing things for the right reason. Whereas in the book, he is a lot more, like, bloodthirsty and, like, basically is a lot more, like, anarchistic than anything else, just wants to destroy everything and start over fresh, brand new. Like, pretty much he knows he had to destroy this whole system in order for everyone to go free.
And right.
The book, they kind of like sanitize him a little bit.
Essentially, the plot is that we're in a future where the government has, you know, given everybody that veil of safety that's not really real, so they can enact control over all of them. And people basically lost freedom for happiness. Supposedly they really don't have their freedoms, and this character comes out of the woodwork on November the 5th, 1997, dressed up in this Guy Fawkes suit, and he is a terrorist as far as like the description of terrorists go. And they change it up a little bit from movie to comic book, where he blows up Parliament right off the bat in the comic book. And kind of the same stuff happens where the government tries to not lose the people by saying it was a construction thing, and they thought about the fireworks, and the foreman thought it would be a great send off, you know, to the Bailey. And but they do kind of like, they change things slightly. The Evie Hammond, who's played by Natalie Portman, they made her like an adult. She's like a child prostitute in the comic book. And I do like her, and I do like Hugo Weaving. But it's kind of weird because it goes back to what you were saying about, like, they wanted a story that was solely England, a British story, and they didn't really want to tie anything of America into it. And this movie almost right off the bat keeps bringing America into it. You know, what's happening in the Americas, and then they have these characters that aren't British with a mostly British cast. I mean, almost every character is.
Everyone other than Hugo.
Natalie Portman. Yeah.
Yeah, everybody else.
Right. It's strange. I think that's kind of the thing that I like the most about the movie. As far as British culture goes, it doesn't always work for me. But, like, for example, when the one character does the Benny Hill type, like, look what I did, I'm standing up to the government, it's really kind of not funny, and he thinks it's hilarious, and his audience thinks it's hilarious, and that's like a prime example of like the British humor that sometimes goes over my head, and I don't think that it is funny, but like, I don't know, I don't have a lot of problems, I guess, with the movie. I think that it is kind of like, I understand the restraints that it has, that it basically wants to be a 2-hour movie. Fails slightly. I think that's a little bit longer. But I think that it moves pretty smoothly, and it does mostly tell the same story. I guess the only thing that it doesn't really translate, I don't think the best, is why they... I never even really, like, picked up on that the people that they were putting in these camps were... you know, black or gay or Jewish, like they're all minorities, and these conversions were like trying to change people. So it's a good bet that V was a homosexual that they put in there and ended up escaping. So I think that's a really kind of weird thing that in 2005, they kind of touch on that Valerie story, the lesbian story that they have in it. And they don't really go any farther than that. It's kind of makes me think of, I don't know, when you're kind of dealing with a fantasy element, I think of something like X-Men, where they can really, like, persecute these mutants for being something that they are. And there's that analogy, like we said, for race or being gay. And in this, it's kind of weird how they hold back, like they want it to be more of an action movie, and they don't really want to straight up address these things for some, I don't know if it was Warner Brothers or whoever was producing the movie that they didn't want to touch on that kind of stuff.
I thought the same thing when they did the scene with Stephen Fry, even though they go into having that, the character of, Valerie, being, again, like you're saying, like, that whole thing's about that she was persecuted for being a lesbian, but then, like, the Stephen Fry thing feels like no one wanted to say the word gay or something like that. Like, it's just, like, way in the background, like, there's pictures of, like, weird erotic pictures, and he's just like, oh, yeah, I'm into strange things. Like, he won't say it, he just keeps mentioning that, yeah, if they came to my house, you'd be the last problem I'd have if they found all this other stuff about me, but he doesn't, like, flat out, like, he won't say it, and they don't want to, like, really bring it up.
Right, the closest we get is when they talk about the Quran.
Yeah.
And how he's executed over the fact that he has the Quran. I thought that was all right. But it's also another thing that's, I think that's another thing where the exposition kind of suffers. Mind you, this is a first-time director. James McTeague worked as an AD, I think, on the Matrix movies, and the Wachowskis definitely wrote this, and this was his first thing. I feel like they definitely had more of a hand in it, because everything that he's made afterwards has not been the greatest.
Yeah, it feels like a poltergeist
situation. Like, yeah, that's what like it feels like to me.
Since they were the writers and producers on it, that they were probably always on set, like, oh, well, you know, maybe, did you think about, like, maybe filming it like this? Did you think about maybe
shooting
it like
this? Right, the action's, like, incredibly good for the most part.
Yeah.
There's no real ugly, like, CG or anything. It does kind of jump around a lot from, like, thing to thing. Some of the stuff does actually, like, I guess the big difference is that I kind of like that the comic book does better, and it definitely has more time, is that it just does a better job kind of covering what V is up to, which is honestly straight up anarchy. He thinks that's the only way that people will truly be free. And you find out that he's been killing people for years, and it's not until he gets to these last couple people who are, like, high up there people that they realize that everybody that survived this Lark Hill incident has had accidental deaths over the last couple of years. So he kills, like, 50 people, and they don't really touch on that too well.
Yeah, in the movie, it's only, you only really see, like, the 3 or 4 that he actually kills on camera.
But I love the flamboyancy that he has, and that it is actually, I really like the idea of this person that's, like, so into drama and the arts that his persona is, like, an extremely dramatic one. And Hugo Weaving's timing, I really, that voice, and I know, I think this is another thing that he didn't like doing, which I almost feel like Hugo Weaving doesn't like doing anything, because anytime they're like, oh, how was being Megatron? He's like, oh, fucking sucked. Like, he's not really happy with any of his roles. But his voice is synonymous with the V character now, for me. And I do think Natalie Portman is a great actress, and I think she brings a lot to the movie, but I really wish they would have probably had, like, a British actress of some sort.
Yeah, it gets
still
distracting sometimes. Like, her accent isn't always, like, 100% convincing or consistent.
And she doesn't have to be British, but I guess at the same time where, like, I'm reading the comic, and you were talking about how eerily things connected to the 2016 election of Donald Trump. One of the first things that they say in that comic book is make Britain great again. And I'm like, holy shit. Like, and this was made in the 80s. I think this was written in, like, 1983.
Yeah.
So
it's like, it's definitely way ahead of it. It's also part of, part of what we were saying, the way that they control people, it feels very much like it is today, in that it's all about a virus. They talk about a plague, except it turns out that it was created by the British, like they were working on things. And the question comes up of, they blame, like, religious fanatics. They say that they created the virus, and then they execute them, and that's what the Finch character is, like, asked his partner or something, who was it that made the virus? And the guy's like, the religious extremists. They confessed the next and were executed, don't you remember? And the guy's like, yeah, but I'm starting to, like, think that that's not what happened. And it's very much, this is definitely Alan Moore, I think, trying to play a little bit off of 1984, obviously. That's the strongest connection that you can make as, like, an inspiration that this film took was 100% that film, the idea of just censoring anything that could,
but more based in a near future reality.
Yeah.
He said his original idea was 1930s, like, gangster era, and they decided to push it into the near future, and I think the near future always kind of works for that, like, oppressed society more than anything else, even though it is an alternate timeline, especially now. I noticed, though, too, the movie, like, when you get towards the end, V's talking about 20 years, so it's supposed to take place closer, I guess, to 2005. So it is, like, a decade after when the comic book would have taken place. And, for the most part, the technologies haven't really changed much. It does have that Watchmen feel where, like, Watchmen's that alternate timeline, and they're stuck in a very specific technological area.
Yeah.
But with, like, V, I think the character is such a great character. He makes me laugh a lot, too. Like, I like when Natalie Portman asks if he's insane, and he's like, they probably will say that I was. I think that just, like, lines like that were genius. Or when she asks if he killed that person, and he's like, yes. Like, there's no hiding around the fact that he did kill them.
Yeah, his whole introduction I really enjoy when he's, like, saying everything with a V. He just keeps rolling on with that. Yeah, it's, I don't know. It is.
And what
really
a weird
fun
timeline, too, where it's just, like, Natalie Portman's character. And it's the same in the comic, too. Evie Hammond. She essentially almost gets raped twice in this comic book series. First by the Fingerman that V saves her from. And then by that priest-esque character who V kind of like sets her up to do that. And I think she is a little naive to it, but I think the older Natalie Portman wouldn't be as naive to what the hell was going on.
Yeah,
if that makes any sense.
Yeah, I know what you're saying. Like, she seems to not have any issue with, like, when he sets her up to go to that priest or bishop or whatever he is, and the guy's clearly,
yeah,
like a weird pedophile, and she's just like, but she's like more concerned with, like, I don't think you understand, there's a criminal running around. And I'm like, this guy that you're in the room with is a very terrible criminal that you're in here right now with. Like, it would make a lot more sense, yeah, for her character to have been like 15 or something like that, and yeah, be a kid. It feels wonderful.
When she meets up with her, well, it's more of a boyfriend character in the comic, but more of a friend, like a comrade in this one. And she's wearing that, like,
that outfit.
I don't know, children's clothes. He has that thought of, like, oh, what's this about? Like his brain goes to exactly what it is. So why didn't her brain go to it when she initially, you know, went to that guy's place? Yeah, it's eerily mirrors what we just went through, I think, in a lot of ways. Like, you brought up the pandemic, but also the whole idea of, like, that secret society that's, like, sleeping with children and getting away with it. It's just, like, kind of all rolled up into one. I almost feel like this film has influenced the actual crazies in the real world. To a huge extent.
Yeah, it feels like another interesting thing when I was watching the movie last night that I was thinking of is V's character and the guy that's the chancellor, whatever his name is, Surgery or whatever his last name is.
His name in the comic is Susan, and
yeah,
I'm like, why did they change Susan
it, yeah,
to Sutler or whatever?
I couldn't remember what it was because I didn't get a chance to reread the book. But I forgot that it's something like feminine, and they changed it for whatever reason. I don't know. It's a weird idea to do, but they're very similar in the sense that they're both almost just representatives of ideas. We never really do get any real sense of who the Chancellor is at all. All we see is those big, you know, when he's on the big video monitor screen. The only time we ever see him as an actual character in the scene is the very end of the movie when he gets killed. But other than that, we never see him in the film as a character interacting really with other people. He's always just a big talking head on the screen. Like, he's never an actual person. He is just literally a giant figurehead.
I do love his, when he ends up in the talk show. And it's clearly him.
Yeah.
Supposedly supposed to be excellent makeup,
be, yeah,
I guess.
Yeah. Yeah, that they got him to play himself as an actor, like they didn't just put a random guy that kind of looks like him.
Yeah, which at first is what I thought it was gonna be, and I'm like, well, it's like I love John Hurt. I think that he's a great actor.
Yeah.
Rest in peace, John Hurt. And he does a great job as being like that maniacal leader And everyone's afraid of him, and I could definitely see people being afraid of him because he's amassed all this power, and he just seems like a total loose cannon. And maybe to an extent, he is the like mirrored version of V. They're both clearly insane, and they both have different plans of how they're gonna tackle this this idea of like what they want society to be.
Yeah, that's how I feel like it feels like it's supposed to be set up as, again, that part of that V isn't an actual person, not really anymore, at least. He is just an idea. He references that in the film, you know, that there really isn't a person underneath the mask anymore. He's just a representative of these ideas, and you know, he'll pass that idea on to everybody else. He himself is like a virus, to like reference that again, that you know, slowly he'll spread and multiply and infect everyone with the idea of freedom. Which there's another thing in this movie that I don't know if it works as well, is the constant intercutting of like just the regular people. Mm-hmm. Like it feels like every 10 minutes we have to get like a shot of like that goofy-looking girl in the glasses, the people in the bar, you know, the other family of, like, two parents and two kids or something like that. Like, it gets somewhat distracting, I feel like, at some times in that film when it just...
Yeah, it feels a bit extreme for the one shot like, that is yeah. They're not home,
yeah.
Which is a good shot, but they could have just been there for when V is doing his broadcast.
Yeah, it's like they just keep cutting back to that numerous times.
I do think for some reason, there's a lot of stuff that I do like. I kind of like the way that he takes over the news station almost more in the movie than he does in the comic. And it kind of plays that same hand of whenever the police finally do get in. And they're all dressed up like him. And I just love that person. It's like, don't shoot. And they shoot him anyways. And I'm like, that's such a cop thing.
Yeah.
And I just love the Finch, his character in this, where he's just sort of baffled by how strategic this all has been. And the character is a smart character, and he has been planning this for a long time. But it is very impressive that he essentially works alone. And what we know from the flashback, he is like an entirely charred human being.
Yeah.
So he doesn't
even have eyes.
Yeah, like he can't sneak around.
He's Daredevil, basically.
He is Daredevil. Crazy is what drives him. I do like the idea of like his... like, he blows up several of these places. He's obviously very smart with his explosives, especially the way that he's set up in the comic, where when he started gardening, he started getting, like, ammonia and stuff to make napalm. And the thing that is more impressive about that is that he knew how to do it from memory, so it's not like he was, like, researching anything. Like, whatever his background is, like, he straight up knew how to make that shit. And in this, I think, like, I have two big gripes, I guess, with this movie. And the scenes are still fun to watch, so it doesn't totally kill it for me. But at the end of the comic, I definitely like how everything has been set up for Evie to make a choice as to what she wants to do. And it's more so her idea of setting V up in a similar fashion as how the movie ends in the train. The only difference is that it's not like Saw based, where it's like, you know, you pull this lever and you make the choice. It's more so that she, with the knowledge of the things that she has at her disposal, what does she decide to do? And she's the one that makes the decision she essentially puts on the costume and everything too. To be like, he's not dead, he's here, and continue the streak of anarchy against the government.
Yeah, it feels like they maybe imply that she'll... the goddamn time.
I guess they're all essentially... They are all essentially become V at the end anyways, so even if she doesn't put on the mask and stuff, then you know that she's on that side of history where she's with them. But after reading the comic, a couple of my perspectives have changed. The one was, and I don't know if it's continuity error, but I had always assumed that when Evie gets kidnapped by the government, they do some shots where, like, it definitely is not Hugo Weaving there, and it's definitely not a charred person that grabs her. So I was always under the assumption that she was kidnapped by them, and then she somehow was saved by him, rescued by him, but he set her up in the same scenario. Because the person that captures her has, like, fucking blue eyes. Like, you can see their eyeballs. So I don't... But when I read the comic, it's him all the way through. Like, it's him who kidnapped her and did all this shit with, like, mannequins and stuff like that to, like, throw her off. And so I think, is the movie... That's, like, is it just continuity errors that make me think that it's... They've changed it? Like, it adds a different meaning to it?
Yeah, I think it was just continuity errors.
And it's supposed to be him the entire time.
Yeah. I think it was just them maybe messing up a little bit there. It happens.
Yeah, I mean, that changed everything for me, too, the way that I thought about it. I think, though, as far as, like, cinematic experiences go, this movie actually does, like, a lot of things that the comic book couldn't achieve. Which was, like, using Tchaikovsky and, like, building up those scenes of when they blew up the Bailey or when they blow up Parliament. Because at the end, when they set off the train with all the explosives in the comic book, they just blow up, like, I think they blow up all of, like, downtown Britain or something. Like, it just blows up somewhere in the middle of the city. It's not, like, even a building. But it's so damn exciting, and I also assume that when I first watched the movie, I thought that when you see these characters that are apparently killed off, I thought that, you know, the little girl was in the detective's imagination when he was explaining what's going to happen, and V's the one that says the friend was executed for having the Quran. So I thought, oh, V's just lying, and the other one was a dream. And now watching the movie when, you know, all the people take off their masks at the end to watch Parliament explode, I had the feeling that, like, it was more surreal. Like, these are actually, they are actually dead, but they're part of that movement. They're part of that idea.
Yeah.
It changed for me. I felt that they were actually dead. They were just there in kind of like spirit.
Yeah, that's how I've taken it, that it's, yeah, just the way it's.
You didn't take it as if they were alive still.
No, they're supposed to be dead.
Because if you think about it, the little girl's a prime example of, they show the parents, but they don't show her with them.
Yeah.
It's like, when she unmasks, it's such a weird, yeah, it's a weird shot that just leads me to believe that the idea is there. I feel, though, to cement it, they should have maybe had Guy Fawkes take off the Guy Fawkes mask and just be, like, there with them.
There's something else weird. Maybe just something that, like, completely pushes it, that it's like, a half, like, fantasy sequence or something like that, that pushes it a little bit more. Because at first, when they start unmasking, and some of them are just, like, background characters, that it's, like, you don't even 100% recognize as, like, oh, yeah, that was that guy. And it's not until, like, yeah, you see the little girl with the glasses, and then you see, like, Stephen Fry take his mask off, and you're like, oh, okay, these are people that are definitely supposed to have been, we've been told that they've been killed.
They're all your favorite characters from the people that just sit at home all the time.
Yeah, all those guys.
Or the pub.
The way they play that out, I guess can be, like, a little bit lost there as to how that's supposed to be taken. They don't, like, 100% make it clear. They had some weird stuff, like the whole, it's another like kind of like exposition-y thing, but the whole moment when Finch comes back to the office and he's telling his partner about how he drove out to Larkhill, and the guy's just like, you drove out there? And he's like, what happened? He's like, it was pretty empty, and he's like, I had a dream that all of this stuff happened, and they show like flashes of the future, the end of the film and everything, and he's just like, yeah.
The dream was the worst, where he's like, is this stuff gonna happen? He's like, I just have a feeling. I'm like, well, yeah. What is going on? Like, you act like you had a premonition of some sort. It doesn't fit with the rest of the movie.
They're so vague with a lot of that stuff, and then like, it's even brought up later when they keep asking how he's gonna blow up Parliament, and they all, everybody else in the government assumes that it's gonna be like some sort of either aerial attack, or they're gonna, you know, drive in with tanks or something like that. And the one guy says something about, oh, we've been checking the railways. And the chancellor's like, why are you checking the railways? Those have been blocked off for 10 years or something like that. And he's like, Finch has a feeling. He's like, I'm not here for your feelings.
I do like when V's like, it took me 10 years to clear the tracks and even rebuild some of them. I'm like, holy shit, like, you are the most productive human being of all time.
Yeah, the amount of stuff that he's able to, that he's somehow able to accomplish pretty much by himself.
It actually feels like when you've had that much time, though, to execute these ideas or something that could have been in the workings for 20 years, I feel one person could have done it. I think with his body being all charred, that's the only thing where I think, well, how does he get around so easily with nobody, like, seeing him? Because even in the movie, the comic does the same thing. Before they reveal that he was, like, burnt badly, he could be any person, you know? You don't assume that he's all burnt up. You just assume that
he's got a nut. His disguise.
Yeah, it's just a disguise, and he gets around. Like, maybe he works in the government. Maybe it's a character that we've seen already. But, yeah, I mean, I guess they could adapt this again if they wanted to.
Oh, yeah.
I think a lot of their changes are really fun. I do like the fact where everybody masks up and meets them outside of Parliament. To an extent, like, when they show all the people, like, walking right next to Parliament, I'm like, these people would definitely get blown up. Like, I've seen this movie before. I saw the explosions. Like, these people would be dead.
Yeah, I'd be interested to see, like you were saying earlier, like, something more like the Watchmen TV show that we got. Something where it can expand a little bit more.
Oh, that would be great. I didn't even think about it that way. An expansion.
Yeah, not have to be just completely contained to it. Like, it would be interesting to even see more or less what happens afterwards. Like you could pick up with Evie's character or something like that down the road and see, like, what his effect really was.
You do the exact same thing that the Watchmen TV show did. It's a sequel to the comic, so it doesn't have to follow the movie at all. Yeah. That would be beautiful. Yeah, I wonder what that would be. I think that when you have a lot of people that really like the source material, and I definitely feel like the Wachowskis, they were kind of like fighting the status quo, because we know that they've transitioned into women and the things that they, like, it still says Wachowski brothers on this. I don't know if they're going to pull a Lucas and go back and try to change that.
I didn't think about that, whether they would ever do, like, how they've, I know some things they've updated. Like, I think they've updated the shows on Netflix, like Umbrella Academy, to say, like, Elliot Page on them now and stuff like that. So, yeah, I don't know. I don't know that they ever, if they specifically would, or if you, I watched a Blu-ray copy, but, like, I wondered if you would stream it, if they'd ever, like, update their names in the...
I got the 4K copy from a year ago or something, yeah. And it still said Wachowski Brothers. I don't think that they're going to go and take the time to pay the money to change that.
That they feel like it would cost more money to go back and edit that out or something like that.
But it's strange to have such a personal story, you know, not feeling like how you can how society views you. And this movie really starts off strong, where they're talking about, you know, we got rid of all the problems. We got rid of the homosexuals. We got rid of, like, they're gone. Yeah, they're all the Muslims. Like, however they say it, it's creepy. No one can say it right. Which is how, if you say it a certain way, that's how you know somebody's racist. Just the way that they pronounce Muslim. But yeah, they essentially, it's 1984, where 1984 really never touched on race or sexuality or anything like that. It was just, I mean, you had the oppression from the government.
It was just more or less like you had to agree with all of our ideas.
They don't really get much further into V where they say anything about who he was as a person, which I'm fine with him being like the more of the enigma character. But I think, yeah, it's just sort of weird. Like, they never question, like, Natalie Portman's character, when she finds out that the Valerie character was real, she knows that V was imprisoned, but she never really asks why he was there, like, what he did. Which I think's an interesting thing. And in the comic book, too, she's basically like, do you like me? Or, like, are you not attracted to me? You know, like, that gets questioned, and in the movie it doesn't get questioned at all. They still have their kiss, which seems to be, I don't know, strange.
Yeah, this movie does a... Again, I don't know, maybe just if they had more time to do something. Again, yeah, doing it as like a TV show or a miniseries or something, they could get into more, but again, saying like what my only issues were is the exposition and kind of the balance of the film. The film feels unbalanced at times with how it wants you to, with what characters it wants you to be or feel are the main characters. It mostly starts off with V and Evie, and then we get a little bit from Finch, and then it's kind of like somewhere in like the midway part of the movie that Finch becomes like the main character, and he's the one we follow more than anybody else. Like after her prison thing, when V locks her up and she leaves and she agrees to come back a year from now, and then she just disappears from the movie. We just get, occasionally you'll get like a reaction shot from her where it was like something was on TV talking about the terrorist V or something like that, and she'll just kind of like look at it and react, and then that's all you really get from her. And it's not till the very end of the movie when she pops back up back in his life, and it's kind of like a weird thing of like you get like a half an hour, 45 minutes of this character just not being in the movie. And like I said, then at that point, like Finch somehow starts to become the main character, which like you said, I think that's why they change him so much from the book, because you needed him to be an actual sympathetic character that people would actually want to, you know, him to have an opinion on things like that, since they kind of switch it so much.
Right, like in the comic, he has like a wife that he beat, and there's a blackout period where the cameras are, they think they're down, they're not down, it's just like the government can't use them, so V can still watch everybody and see what's going on. But she buys a gun and she ends up shooting the chancellor in the face, which was like a big moment of, you know, this society having this uprising. And it's really earned from that character. So like when you take away from Finch and you make him just like this generic cop, like he added all this backstory to Evie, and you have backstory to V, but you don't really like go have any depth to the detective at all. You don't show his home life. He's just there 100% for exposition.
Yeah, to look so, things up, to be the one to get the reveals.
Yeah, I mean, I guess I don't think that like the comic book doesn't spell things out for you that easily. You just kind of pick up on what's going on. Thank God they use names a lot, because a lot of the drawings, they don't look that much different.
Yeah, I feel like this is like the one that I, maybe that's why this one like doesn't stand out as much to me, because I've read the other books, like his other big books, like Watchmen, From Hell, League of Extraordinary Gentlemen, and this one like always, like I read it a couple times and it never stands out to me, and maybe that's why, like I feel like I look back at it and I'm like, I don't like the art as much. Like, I love Watchmen. I think that looks, like, beautiful the entire way through. From Hell's really interesting the way it looks. Like, and maybe that's, like, where I've always, like, it's forgettable for me.
It is basically a novel with so-and-so picture. You know what I mean? Like, the imagery, you're right, is not that amazing. I mean, what the basic, like, them playing around mostly with V in the shadows and the smile. Like, there's even a part in the comic where he dresses up more like a jester or something. He has a different costume, and he takes this guy on, like, a tour of his past that's, like, his demented past. And I think that, like, if they had more time, they could have done something similar, and the exposition would have been, like, fucking out the door for a lot of it because of the way that he chose to torture this guy. And he didn't kill him. He just drove him insane. So he's not up a straight-up murderer.
Yeah, I don't know. Like I said, I think this is a... I don't know. I don't know why his books seem like... They never get adapted quite right. They do feel like part of it is that they don't... He is, again, like we were kind of describing earlier, he is super British, and he loves all things British more than I think anything else, even though, I guess, yeah, Watchmen's kind of the only thing I can think where he really did, like, an American story, but again, it almost feels like it's more of a parody of American-styled superhero comics, so it's almost more like he's making fun of American comics with something like that. Because you get to, like, this from Hell's, old, like 18th century British with Jack the Ripper, and then League of Extraordinary Gentlemen's all these historical British characters from literature that pop up and come to life. And I don't know. I don't know if maybe it's an issue of, like, his movies keep getting remade by Americans and they just don't feel like people would care that much about British history and culture, and that they have to Americanize them.
I almost felt too when he did V for Vendetta, it wasn't necessarily like anything against America. I felt that he wanted it strictly to take place in Britain because it had a different tone than anything American could have had, and that was like something that helped separate it from your ordinary superheroes. And the comic I had too even showed like original designs that they had, and they changed it because they wanted it. They didn't want him to become, like, a generic superhero. And maybe that's where people kind of get angry with the film, is that he's as much of a superhero as, like, anything, as Batman. You know, like,
yeah.
He's very similar in that sense.
He's basically,
like,
Daredevil. He's blind, yeah. But he can somehow fight. He has, like, superhuman strength. Like, we see him throw those fingermen, like, into walls and, like, it breaks.
Yeah, with his knives.
Like, he has, like, some weird, like, super strength going on or something.
He has the strongest knife throw of all time. I love...
The strongest? I believe Kiyoma has the strongest knife throw of all time.
Oh, he can throw the farthest,
okay.
But he's not knocking people back.
He doesn't have the power.
He doesn't have the power to knock people back another mile.
One day we'll do the theme that's all knife throwing, so we can redo our Kiyoma. It's going to be for
the best knife throwers, yeah. That would be great. I do like the beginning of this movie, though, where they do the juxtaposition between V and Evie. And I really like how they show them, like, walking towards each other, essentially. Like, they're both getting ready. And you can tell that they're going to, like, come together in some aspect. As opposed to the comic where she's trying to, like, prostitute herself for the first time and ends up being a fingerman that she runs into, and then V comes out of the woodwork.
Yeah.
I do like that they go really heavy on the 5th of November in this movie in the beginning, explaining the Guy Fawkes thing. But I do like when he is gonna go do his symphony and he's like, "Do you know what day it is?" And she's like, "November 4th," and he's just, "Not anymore," and he starts conducting it. Also, what's her name is in it? Imogen Poots. I didn't remember that she was in this movie.
She is one of the kids.
Yeah, she's like the young Valerie.
Okay. I forgot, like, I didn't look it up, but when I was watching the movie, I was like, that girl, like, that reminds me, like, she looks very familiar, but I forgot to, like, look it up when we were done.
You know who also looks familiar? The family that had the two kids, that boy.
Yeah.
For some reason, he reminded me of the boy from Unbreakable, but I don't feel like it would be him. I don't know.
I mean, it could be around the same time, because what Unbreakable was, like, 2003, I think?
I think it's even earlier. I think it's like straight up 2000.
Maybe 2001 is what. Sixth Sense was like 1999.
Quit trying to age it. It's a 2000 movie, period. It is. I'm pretty sure. Like 90%.
Won't commit to the 400%.
99%. It's going up. I'd have watched it recently, so... Well, and by recently, I think last year.
Yeah, whenever you saw... whenever you went to see
Glass.
It. Yeah.
Glass is longer. It was like a 2019 movie. Like, time is flying for us right now.
We just don't have the same time anymore.
But yeah, I mean, I guess what kind of drew me to the character of V in the movie in general was that the approach was this, like... It wasn't just the terrorism aspect that really drew me in. It was the fact that the character was fun and he had this point. And, yeah, I mean, I don't know. Comparing them is, it almost doesn't seem fair, but I think overall they did a really good job of compacting 12 comics into a 2-hour movie, essentially. It's not the greatest, but with the time, I think they cover a lot of big points and they adapt things well. Like some of the changes that they make are great. It just comes down to my biggest complaint of all time: bad exposition. And because like I think a lot of it could have been done without having to like say it. And I don't know. Maybe I just wouldn't want to pick up a story where we have to throw so much exposition into it. Like, how can you tell it in a different way? Like, I liked in the comic book where V would write his V, and they're like, that's from the blood. Like, he cut off somebody's finger and, like, wrote his V. Also, he didn't go as heavy with the dominoes in the comic as he did in this one. I'm also very impressed, too. The one effect that I would like to understand how they did it was when they do the whole domino thing and the one domino like perfectly won't get knocked over. And I'm thinking, is this a CG effect? Is this where they threw in the CG? Because for the most part, the dominoes look like they paid somebody to really like set them all up.
I do think that at least what I had read before was that it was like a guy that does that as like his professional thing is like setting up domino effects for things, and that he had to like plan it perfectly and had to like test it multiple times to get it to where they fall just perfectly on like that last one. I don't think
it's weird to me that. Too though, because the whole domino monologue in the comic book is basically V saying, you know, I mean, in the movie they make it out to be that, you know, the dominoes fall and everything like just is done for. And in the comic book, it's more along the lines of it just takes one little push and you can make so much change, which is more like a butterfly effect thing. But he's like, you know, you make, it's like the flick of a finger and everything can come down. And he's, you know, discussing like the structure and stuff like that. And I mean, I guess essentially what he's doing is just showing what people are losing at the cost of what they think is freedom. And obviously he's a fucking maniac. I'm surprised that they never, whether he killed people or not, it doesn't seem like he did. It seemed like he tried to time things when people weren't there. You know, like blowing up Parliament at midnight. I'm surprised that the government wasn't like, oh yeah, he killed this terrorist, killed innocent people, and like tried to make him out to be more of a terrorist. Like something that they should be afraid of. Not like a cool guy in a mask that's like saying shit that people are like, man, he speaks real talk. But yeah, any final thoughts?
I think we pretty much covered everything. I don't know if I can say that it like held up better than I thought, because this is probably the first time I've watched this movie in, like, at least 10 years, maybe. I can't remember the last time I've sat down and watched this movie. Maybe you've seen like bits and pieces of it here or there, if it was just randomly on TV, but it wasn't one that I have gone back to, really. So I was kind of wondering, and I remembered liking it when I watched it originally. I don't know, I think it holds up well enough. It's definitely, I guess it definitely is interesting to view it now, because it does reflect a lot of different things now, and I guess it's a film that you can very easily, I think, project different things into. You can see it, you can see it playing out with a lot of different things. We reference the 2016 elections and going through everything like that, and also then the pandemic connects to it. So it's an interesting movie. It's kind of made in a way that, again, like I said, it's vague enough that the Chancellor just represents an idea of, the worst case scenario, and you could kind of see different things in it depending on how you look at it. So I think it still holds up pretty well.
I mean, I agree. I don't seem to be, maybe because I read the comic right beforehand, I didn't seem to be enjoying it as much, but I feel like if I hadn't read that and went straight into the movie, I'd have been like, oh yeah, this is great, and it'd take me right back to 2005 when I saw it in theaters and was like, oh, this is so awesome, it's so different. Because, the things that bother me the most is just like the things that they kept really kind of PG at the end of the day. And these, like, touchy subjects that they didn't really go into. But, I mean, it's fun. But do you want fun, or do you want it to be a little bit, to have more meaning to it? I think that's probably what Alan Moore would want. He would want that meaning. But, yeah. So this month, November, that we are finally in, we are only doing two episodes, which I guess is giving us some time off, right? We'll see. It will be just as hectic, just not recording, I'm sure. But we obviously did one of two episodes. Our second episode will come out on Thanksgiving, and you can just guess what that's going to be. It's Thanksgiving related. And it's not hard to figure out if you just try to think of Thanksgiving movies. But like always, thank you for listening. We're going to work on this new setup and hopefully get our sound sounding a little bit better. Our conversations, I think, are better. I like this one. I'm always not trying to make things super long if I can't help. If I can help it, I'd rather just have like a short, concise conversation about a movie without critiquing it too hard, which really sucks because we critique them regardless. I don't want to be seen as a reviewer. I just want to, like, absorb the movie and kind of give some thoughts on it. It's like me describing exactly what critiquing is. But thank you for listening. Stick with us. We're basically in the rocket. We're going off right after Thanksgiving. And we have a pretty fun December. And we're hitting a lot of big movies for the next couple months. So, stay tuned.
Thanks.
And thank you.